Today is Thursday, January 25th. We're going to work on blood typing and blood today. Just a reminder, exam number one has been moved to Tuesday, February 6th. Okay, so we're going to look at page 30 with Rh factor. So I know we talked about this during the last few minutes of class on Tuesday, and that's usually what we least remember during those last few minutes of class. You know, we're thinking about leaving and getting up and going, that kind of thing, so that stuff doesn't often stick as well. I do want to mention that Rh factor is very common. 85% of us carry the Rh antigen on our red blood cell surfaces. Only 15% of the population tends to be Rh negative. And even in some ethnic groups, it may be as much as 100% of the ethnic group carries an Rh antigen, and no one is Rh negative in those groups. So it's interesting that it tends to fall along ethnic lines, more or less. But lots of people are, in fact, Rh positive. What does it mean to be Rh positive? Good. You got an Rh antigen on your blood cell. And so that means that we have the factor or we're positive for that antigen. The Rh factor, I do want to mention, has nothing to do with ABO. So whatever your ABO blood type is has no influence over your Rh factor. So they're two totally different blood types. If you're Rh negative, do you carry an antigen?
No.
Okay, so there's no antigen for the Rh factor if you're considered to be negative. Okay, so I just want to make sure that we just repeat that because it is confusing to think about Rh positive versus negative. Positive, you've got the factor or the antigen. Negative, you do not. Okay, sometimes they call this the D antigen. The confusing thing there is now you've got ABO and then you've got D. D is not part of that ABO group. It's just an alternate way to say that you've got an Rh factor. If you're Rh negative, then we would say you don't have the D antigen. So just an alternate way of looking at that. All right. In terms of transfusions, you know, we talked in class in here on Tuesday about transfusions. In terms of the ABO blood groups, by age 5, you've probably formed antibodies against foreign blood types, even though you may have never had a transfusion. But not the case with the Rh factor. It actually takes a transfusion in order for you to be exposed and sensitized against foreign blood types in terms of the Rh factor. So if you're positive for the Rh factor, do you need to form antibodies against the Rh factor?
No.
Okay, so if you're positive, you do not need anti-Rh antibodies. Now, if you're negative, could you form those anti-Rh antibodies?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So you don't normally have those unless you've been exposed either through a transfusion or by pregnancy. So the first transfusion of an Rh positive blood to an Rh negative person, the antigen antibody reaction is slow to build. So let me pull back out my props that we were looking at in here on Tuesday. I feel like a magician with a goodie bag. Okay. So let's see, if you are negative, okay, and you are now exposed to Rh positive blood, okay, the formation of these antibodies is slow. So by the time, you know, whatever you need the transfusion for, you're up and running, you know, quite quickly by the time you've gotten this blood into your bloodstream. And of course, the antibody formation is going to be slow. So you're going to be on the healing end of the process by the time your antibodies are really kind of ramped up. So that's why the first transfusion of an Rh positive blood into an Rh negative blood person is going to create a very slow reaction. So the second time that you get an Rh positive blood transfusion and you are Rh negative, guess what you've already got waiting around? Antibodies, right. And so your body has already created an antibody that is specifically built against the Rh factor. So what do you think about the second transfusion? You are not in a good place. So what are you waiting with?
Antibodies.
So your body is much faster on the second exposure because it says, oh, you've been here before, I've seen you, I've got an army of antibodies built and ready in place. And it's much quicker once you've got a template made to to attack and bind and agglutinate those foreign antigens. So the second transfusion happens to be a little more serious. So what we do is, if we happen to give somebody who was negative an Rh positive blood type, you know, the important thing is life-saving, right? Getting that blood in the circulation. They can give immunosuppressant drugs that prevent you from building anti-Rh antibodies. And that, of course, can suppress antibody formation and, you know, reduce that response that we would see otherwise, okay? So second transfusion tends to be a little more severe. And I do want to mention that pregnancy works the same way. If you have a mom who is Rh negative, the first pregnancy is the same thing as the first transfusion for an Rh negative person. Would you expect mom to have an antibody army built against the Rh factor?
No.
Okay, so not first pregnancy, right? Babies are tiny, right? You know, you compare an 8-pound baby to mom, that's a really tiny body with very small amounts of blood. So it takes a baby growing in size, the Rh antigen from the baby coming into mom's bloodstream to trigger and sensitize mom to build anti-Rh antibodies. So they give a shot called a Rogam shot to a negative mom twice. They give it to her like around week 28 and again at birth. And what do you think that Rogam shot does to mom's antibodies? Stops them, right? Yeah, suppresses her from forming them. And why is that important that we do this for mom? You don't want the mom's antibodies to attack the baby's, yep, antigens, right? Okay, so let's say that, you know, we're 200 years ago. They have no idea what blood types are, never mind Rogam shots or anything of that sort. So let's say that mom, who is negative, is pregnant with her first baby, who is an Rh positive baby. So during that pregnancy, what does mom build? Good. What happens to the baby's blood? Mom's antibodies cross the placenta
and start attacking the baby's.
That's right. This process is called
glutination.
Good. So mom's antibodies attack and agglutinate baby's Rh antigens, okay? So you'll notice here that the first, you know, exposure, mild damage, we don't intend to see, you know, severe damage during that first pregnancy. So the baby may be born, maybe functional, maybe okay. But here's the deal. If you don't have that Rogam shot, which 200 years ago they did not have, the second pregnancy that is another Rh positive baby, what is waiting for those antigens?
Antibodies.
So mom's antibodies cross the placenta once again, and this time the reaction is much more severe because we've got an army of antibodies waiting. So what happens to this baby? Yeah, we could see birth defects like brain damage. We could see the baby born anemic. We could see the baby born with hypoxia or low levels of oxygen. And you're right, the baby could die. It could be a stillbirth. So if mom subsequently had positive babies every pregnancy, she may have one healthy baby first and then no baby after that survive. Wow. And she probably thought she'd been cursed, right? Okay. So if she ever had a negative baby, what do you think happened?
She had another baby.
She got what?
She had another baby.
She had another baby, exactly. So she might have gotten lucky somewhere down the line and had another baby that was perhaps negative. But, you know, if she's having positive babies, then she's going to be fighting them with her own antigen, or her own antibodies, rather. There's a name for this disorder. They call it hemolytic disease of the newborn. They also call it erythroblastosis fetalis. Either way you look at it, it is the mom's antibodies attacking the baby's antigens. Okay, and so we tend to see problems like this. This is the agglutination process. We know that those red blood cells are attacked and agglutinated by these Y-shaped antibodies, and unfortunately that can cause the red blood cells to rupture. And that can rip holes in capillaries in the kidneys and cause all sorts of damage. All right. So Rh factor is a little different than the ABO blood groups in terms of the way we form antibodies. It actually takes exposure through either pregnancy or through a transfusion to form those anti-Rh antibodies. Okay, so let me just mention that when we talk about antigens versus antibodies, it is a mouthful to say anti-Rh antibody. It's easy just to say the Rh antibodies, right? Okay, so I encourage you to adopt the mouthful technique and say the whole word, because it will keep you straight. If you say just the antibodies, then sometimes it's easy to get confused as to what you're building antibodies against. So I encourage you to say anti-so-and-so antibodies. Say the whole thing to get yourself in a pattern there. Okay, so what I'd like to do is take you back to the chart. This one's on page 31. I'd like to help you complete some of that chart. Do y'all have questions on Rh factor? Anything with those antibodies so far? Okay, so let's take a look at that chart, and that chart actually combines ABO and Rh factor. There's lots of blood charts out there on the internet like this. You can go and research some. You can just type in blood typing chart. Lots of them come up. So I encourage you not to memorize the chart. It's an easy thing to say, okay, I'm just going to memorize this and I'm going to make it work for me. But the comfort level you need to be at is to start with the chart as a place to get your bearings straight and then wean yourself off of it. Ultimately, what you need to be able to do is flip over to page 32. Take a deep breath, right? There's 50 practice questions there. I don't expect you to do all 50. What I'd like you to do is practice until you're comfortable. In other words, practice until you don't have to flip back the page to the chart. If you can do that, you're good. Okay? So, you know, do as many as you need. I think if you do all 50, you're there. Okay? But you don't want to have to memorize the chart, and you don't want to have to use it as a crutch when you're doing blood typing. Wean yourself off as you get further along. So let's take the A positive blood type there first. Let's find something different to look at. Okay, so let's take A positive as our blood type. We know that the A and the positive are telling us something about the antigens present on the cell surface. What antigens do we carry?
A and Rh.
A and Rh, good. This is my cheat sheet up here on the PowerPoint. There's only three antigens we're discussing today, A, B, and Rh. You only build antibodies against antigens, okay? So if I've got the A and the Rh, the only antigen I don't have is B. And so that's the only antibody I can build. I can't build antibodies against O, right?
Right.
Okay, and I can't build an antibody against negative because there's nothing there. So in terms of what I can build an antibody against, the only antigen I don't have is B. So my antibody is an anti-B antibody. Good so far? Okay. Any questions so far, how we figured this stuff out? So the trick is, when I'm trying to figure out who I can receive from, I can't violate my antibody, because if I get blood from anybody with a B blood type, then I'm going to have my anti-B antibodies agglutinating that blood type. So that means I can't receive from B positive, B negative, I can't get any blood from AB people, so they're off the list. Who can I receive blood from?
A
and O. All right, so let's talk about those Rh factors. How about A positive?
Yes.
Yeah, you can get from your own blood type, definitely. Can A positive receive from A negative?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so the catch is, doesn't have the Rh factor, that's right, good. So there's no foreign thing about A negative that's gonna set off an alarm in my bloodstream, okay? How about O's? A negative and O positive. And again, why is O negative okay?
Because it doesn't have an RH factor.
Doesn't have an RH factor, right. So let me just kind of go back to something that we were talking about a little bit in here on Tuesday. In terms of blood donations and in terms of transfusions, they may give you blood cells. So when we're talking about blood cells, these antigens are the primary important thing that we're looking for. If we're talking for blood plasma, which may be something we transfuse from a burn patient, the antigens are not so much the issue as are the antibodies. How come? Where do we transport those antibodies? Sure. For a burn patient, we're mostly concerned about blood plasma transfusions, and blood plasma, of course, is going to be carrying those antibodies. So the antibodies are going to be the primary important thing for a plasma donation. Okay, so that's the catch there, is if you're talking about plasma, we're talking about the antibodies that we're carrying or potentially carrying. Okay, does that make sense? You need to hear it again?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do this. I'm getting the deer in headlights.
Real
slow. Yeah. Blood cells. Okay, blood cells. We're concerned about antigens. Okay, so certain people need certain things, right? Cancer patients may need only blood cells. You know, a burn patient needs plasma. Somebody else in surgery that's, you know, hemorrhaging may need whole blood. So I want to just kind of take these three apart. If we're talking about you just needing blood cells, not the plasma, not the liquid part of the blood, then the real issue we're looking at is antigen compatibility, okay? If we're talking about, you know, maybe a burn patient, somebody who's had severe burns on their body, one of our biggest concerns there is dehydration, and one way to help pump back up their fluids is to give them plasma. Yeah. That's right. That's what they need, right? Get that plasma. Get those plasma proteins back. Now, the issue is if you're doing a plasma donation, there could be antibodies in the transport. So that's where we look at antibodies. And if you're looking at whole blood, which is cells and plasma, what are you looking at? You got it. Yep, so if you're looking at whole blood, then yeah, you've got both antigens and antibodies that you're looking at. So let's think big picture here. If you are A positive and you're receiving A positive in a transfusion, what antibodies are carried in the blood of an A positive person?
B.
Good. Anti-B antibodies are carried. So if you're A positive and you get blood from the A positive person, then you're getting the exact same antigens and the exact same antibodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. That's the ideal situation. They say O negative is the universal who?
Donor.
Okay. So what potential antibodies might they transport? Could be Rh. Yeah, anti-Rh antibody. What else? Yeah. All of the above. Yep. So they could carry an anti-A, anti-B, and an anti-Rh antibody if you get a plasma or a cold blood donation from the O negative person. So that's just a small risk, just something to keep in the back of our minds. So if you're giving that to a person with A-positive blood, you could potentially be transfusing to them an anti-A and an anti-RH antibody that could attack and agglutinate their own blood type. You see how that works? How could it do that?
I mean, why is it considered universal donor to get a risk of
agglutinating? The bigger issue is the blood cells. So that's why they type the blood cells, and that's why we do a transfusion based on the blood, the antigens, or the lack thereof. The antibodies that are in circulation, there is a smaller amount of those, and so they're less likely to cause a big deal or an agglutination reaction than the antigens on the red blood cell surface.
So can it be separated?
We can separate it, yeah. So we could potentially give you O-negative cells, which of course have no antigens on them, and then that way we don't introduce the antibodies. So it depends on what the person needs. Just something to consider here and think about, we carry about 5 liters of blood, and if you're getting a pint of blood, which is a very small amount, then you're getting a very small amount of antibodies in the transfused blood. What matters is the life-saving part of getting that transfusion, and less so the fact that you might be getting a few antibodies in that transfused blood that could potentially agglutinate your own. Give it some time, your liver will actually get rid of those foreign antibodies and get them out of your bloodstream. So it's not gonna be a long-term issue. Makes sense so far?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do the next one together. Let's do A negative. And this time, the antigen that we carry is?
A.
Just A. And the potential antibodies that we could form are?
Anti-B and anti-RH.
Good, anti-B and anti-RH. They're a little more limited in transfusions here, especially with antigen compatibility. So what 2 blood types can we transfuse?
A negative and O negative.
A negative and O negative, good. Okay, so let's hit that last column there. We haven't yet talked about giving blood away to somebody. So if you walk into the Red Cross and you say, I am A positive, and I'm just curious who could receive my blood. In other words, who could I give my blood to in a transfusion? Certainly your own blood type would be a compatible one for you to transfuse to. Who else could you give it away to if you're A positive?
AB positive.
AB positive, good. Anybody else?
Can you give it to O?
No.
Why can't you give it to O?
Because they have the A antibody.
Yeah, if you're A and you're giving it to O, you're giving the O person your A antigen. And guess what that O person thinks about your A antigen?
They don't really like it.
Yeah, that you don't like that, you're foreign, you're gonna fight it, right? Okay. So here's the trick. Whoever you're donating your blood to has to have seen your antigens, right? Because I'm not giving some antigen that's unseen to these types here. In fact, why can I not give A positive to A negative?
The RH.
Yeah, I'd be giving that RH factor, and then that person with the A negative blood would form anti-RH antibodies, yeah. Okay. Let's take the A-negative person who walks into the blood bank and says, I want to donate blood. Who can I give my blood to?
A-negative.
A-positive.
Yeah. So.
A-negative.
What do you think of that list? A-negative, A-positive, A-B-negative, and A-B-positive. Good, good. So you don't have the RH as an A-negative person, but you're right. You can go in there and you can give it to people who do have the RH factor because...
They don't have anything to fight against because you don't have the antibody.
Right, right. So you're not giving anything foreign to those people, right, that are AB positive and A positive. So if you're A-negative giving it to A positive, then you're not introducing something that's foreign. Okay. How are you doing so far?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to work on this together as a group? Or would you like me just to continue and finish out the chart for you?
You just keep going and explain.
I keep going, okay. That works. That sound like a plan?
Great.
Okay. All right, next one is be positive. And of course, there's that RH factor, so we've got an RH antigen sitting there. Thinking about our antigens that we haven't seen or that would be considered foreign.
Okay, the Nobel Prize, what happened again or whatever, when the blood type was AB positive, you know, you have to hang your blood back.
Yeah.
It will let you hang the AB positive, AB negative blood bags, or O negative, O positive, or something, but it would not let you pick an A, Y.
Really?
Yeah, I noticed that too, and I thought,
it confused.
Yeah.
I'll go play that and see. I've played it before, but not gotten that particular situation.
It won't let you give
yeah.
the A.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my
god.
If it was AB, it won't let you give
the
A.
The
individual A or
the
B.
Really? Yeah,
it screams.
It screams.
The
people.
Person screams.
I know. That's a good one. It's random, though, right?
That was actually the last one that we did before we came into class.
Okay.
Interesting.
That is not right. I mean, technically an AB positive can get an A positive blood type. I will go play and see if I can. I'll go play and see if I can find that particular one to pop up at me. It's still in the emergency room, and you're typing it, and then you're giving them blood bags. Okay, I'll play until I get that one to pop up. Yeah, that is not correct. Okay. So let's see. For a B positive person, what kind of antibody would you make?
Anti-A.
I gave it to you, didn't I? Okay. And so, following a pattern here, if you're B positive, you can get your own blood type. Mm-hmm. And who else can you receive from?
A negative.
Good. So definitely B positive, B negative.
O positive.
Good. Good. Why can't we get, say, AB negative?
Because of the A antigen.
You've got an A anti-A antibody, and you would find that person's A antigen, right? B negative, or let's go ahead and do the giveaway too. If you give away your B positive blood, you can certainly do B positive. AB positive, good. Can you give your B positive to B negative blood?
No.
RH factor, right? So that person would, of course, form antibodies. Okay. Let's see. B negative is our next one with what antigen only?
B.
Just B. All right. What kinds of antibodies?
RH.
Good. Good. In terms of who you can receive from, there's just two. B and O, yep, so they're just the negatives. So you'll start to see here that the Red Cross and any blood bank is going to love you negatives, right? Because you can give your blood away to more people. So if you're B negative, who can you give your blood to?
B negative.
Good, so you've got B negative, B positive, AB negative, and AB positive. Doing okay so far? Anything like not clicking or making sense that I can go back and talk you through? Got a question?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about to say the RH.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because
like we have an A positive, you automatically have a RH.
Automatically.
So, you know, A negative.
you talking antigens or antibodies?
Antigen.
Okay, so if I say that I'm positive, like that one, yeah, I automatically have the antigen for it. And if I'm negative, there's no antigen for being a negative. So if I'm positive, like B positive, I've got that Rh antigen or Rh factor, I'm positive for it. And then if I am negative, like B negative, then I don't have an antigen for it. Is that kind of where you're at?
I think it seems that like the negative makes it seem like a charge, like you should still have the Rh, but it's still a negative. But negative means without. Like,
it means without.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it means you don't have it.
Exactly. It's like being negative for the flu. You just don't have it. Yeah. I'm flu negative, right? That's what you want to be.
Can you explain how, like, being negative can get the A positive?
In terms of antigens, if I'm B negative and I can look at, say, somebody's, like, AB negative and AB positive, they've got my B antigen just like, you know, we share that in common. And because I'm negative, I don't have an Rh factor, and they don't either. AB negative doesn't either. So there's nothing new or foreign that I'm introducing in terms of antigens to them. In terms of the AB positive person, we both share the B antigen, so there's nothing foreign that I'm giving in terms of B. And because I'm negative, I don't have that antigen. So they do, so I'm still not giving them anything that's foreign or new to them. So that's the catch, is who I'm giving it to has to have seen what I'm giving them before. You know, they've got to have my antigens, basically.
So you have the B, so you're given the A, B, the B, but you don't have anything else, so all you're given is the B. You're not given an A or Rh.
That's correct.
All you're giving is
the
B.
That's all I'm given is a B. And they've seen the B, so they're like, we're all good in terms of antigens. Yeah.
But the B negative does have the anti-A, and if you give it to A, like you said, it's not going to like be that major of an issue.
Right.
But it's still there.
Right, because you look at that and you say, I'm giving B negative to AB negative, and if I'm giving whole blood, I'm also giving that antibody, and you're like, ah, but it's a small amount, yeah.
So a positive B can give to a positive A?
Is
that AB?
Somebody want to take that?
A positive B can give to a positive A, but it can't give to a positive
AB. Yeah.
Because it has the B on it.
You know what I mean?
That's like comparing, like, if you were B and an A, you can't fit together. But if you were AB and a B, you can fit together because you got that B and that B.
Okay.
It's working. You just can't. You can't give that B antigen to the A person because the A person says, "Whoa, I don't take B," so it's a foreign thing to the A person. But the AB person, like she's saying, AB person, it's a common bond. Yeah,
like we don't have that.
The B's. Yeah, that's good. How about other questions? These are good questions. We'll keep going. Okay, let's do AB positive. What antigens does AB positive carry?
AB and Rh.
Good. So those are kind of like identifiers or tags on the red blood cell surface that says, this is who I am. I'm A, I'm B, and I'm an Rh. So that's kind of like the what it's wearing to advertise itself. And so that means that we actually have all three antigens and there's no need to form any antibodies. Yeah. None.
Isn't that known as the universal recipient?
That is right, good. So if AB positive is the universal recipient, it gets blood from
everybody.
Good. So in terms of who you're receiving from, if you're AB positive, Are any of these blood types introducing a foreign antigen?
No.
Yeah, we've seen all of these antigens, right? And is there any antigen associated with these negatives?
No.
No antigen. And how about O?
No.
No antigen there, right? Okay, so O itself is not an antigen. It's just the lack of A or B. So it's kind of like negative in that aspect, right? AB positive walks into the Red Cross and says, I'm here to donate blood. I'd like to know who could receive my blood. And they answer,
AB
positive. And that is,
I don't like that.
This is bad, but we're good.
Here's a teacher.
Do you know why Red Cross loves you though, AB positive? Whole blood. Think whole blood for a minute.
Yeah.
You have no antibodies. So if they have, say, a burn patient who needs your plasma, perfect. There's no antibodies there. Yeah. So far, so good. Okay. Any questions so far on AB positive? Let me let you try AB negative.
Your antigens are A and B.
Okay.
Your antibodies are H.
Who you give to, if it's just two people.
A-B.
Got it. So just to repeat something I mentioned earlier, if you are AB negative, you don't automatically form anti-RH antibodies until you are sensitized through one of two things.
Pregnancy or transfusion,
right. So if you're 50 years old and you're a man and you've never been pregnant, and you're just not ready for a baby yet, right? And if you haven't ever had a transfusion, then you know you'll have none. So they'd still like to have you at the Red Cross for your plasma. Let's try O positive. The antigen there is only
RH.
RH, good. And the antibodies you would form?
Anti-A.
Good. And you can receive blood from?
O-negative.
Why is it okay that O-positive receives blood from O-negative?
Because it's not RH.
Right. You're not getting anything foreign, right? Okay, so O negative means that that person has no RH factor. Good. Blood bank loves you, O positive, right? Because you can give to all positive blood types. Why can't we give this blood to any negatives?
Because
RH factor, right. All right, so let's see. Antigens for O negative are none. Antibodies carried in the plasma. Yeah. Blood bank doesn't want your plasma, right? But they'll take your blood cells because they have no antigens. And you can receive blood only from, but you can give it to
everyone.
Good. just some food for thought here. Can you tell me what is opposite about AB and AB positive specifically and O negative?
One is the recipient, one is the donor.
Good. One is the recipient, one is the donor.
The O has no antigens.
Good.
So it has a bunch of antibodies.
Right.
And the AB has no antibodies.
Good.
But yeah, it has a lot of antigens.
And in terms of the way they can receive and give, that's also kind of opposite. See, their boxes are kind of opposite. That's right. That's right. That's a great way to think about it, too. I don't know if everybody heard what she said, but...
Damn, that's good.
It's a process. You want to say it again for everybody?
Okay.
The AB positive can receive from everyone but give to itself, and the O negative can receive from itself and give to everyone.
Fine. That's good.
Ooh.
That is a brain twister.
Yeah. Are you writing it down?
Oh. Yep. So I'm going to encourage you again to practice page 50. There are answers on D2L in the news area. I would avoid memorizing the chart. Lean on it until you can wean yourself off of the chart. But if you're still having to do the chart the night before the test, you're not ready for those questions yet. Just something to think about in terms of how to study the stuff. Try page 50, or, sorry, not 50, page 32 with 50 questions on it. Where can I help you? Is there parts that I can go back and re-explain or clarify?
And everything.
And go back to endocrine, yeah.
Yeah.
We could next Thursday. We'll have some time. Yeah. So what I'd like to do is take you back to the beginning of the chapter and hit some of that basic info. And the chapter begins on page 22. Today about blood is something that we will take with us into discussions about blood pressure and heart information. You may have learned back in Bio210 about connective tissues and learned that blood was unique because it is our only liquid or fluid connective tissue. So we know that blood on average has around 55% volume composed of blood plasma. That's the liquid portion, and around 45% by volume is going to be the blood cells. In fact, most of the blood cells of that 45% are what color?
Red.
They're mostly red, yeah. So when we're thinking about the ratio here, we're looking at a little more than half of your blood being composed of liquid and a little less than half being composed of those blood cells. I want to emphasize that because of how blood is transported, we are using a liquid plasma to transport those solid red blood cells. So imagine a river for just a moment. If you had a river with a lot of boulders and rocks in them and not a lot of water flowing in that river, what's going to happen to those rocks?
They're going to sit there.
They're going to sit there, right? Let's imagine the same river after a flood. Lots of water, same boulders. Now what happens?
Move
them. So what we're thinking about here is if you've got changes in the levels of fluid in your bloodstream, that's going to impact how easily we can transport our blood, which is, you know, those red blood cells. So the viscosity or the thickness of blood depends upon how much fluid you're transporting. We transport on average around 5 liters. Males have a little more, females a little less due to body size. Males have on average around 5 to 6 liters. Females have on average around 4 to 5 liters. But we're just going to adopt the number of 5 as being our average human body volume of blood. Okay, so 5 to 6 for males, 4 to 5 for females. To make this simple, let's just say the average human body has around 5 liters of blood. To put this in perspective, you know, liters and stuff are kind of hard to imagine in terms of volume, but these are 2-liter bottles, and if you've got 6 of them, that's how much a large male may carry or transport, and a smaller female may only transport 2 of those 2-liter bottles. So when you're talking about blood volume loss, it doesn't take a whole lot to get into trouble. So the term here, hypovolemia, is a problem. That means you've got low blood volume. And you'll notice that you can lose only 10 to 20% and go into shock. So that's not a whole lot of blood that you might lose. You may have learned that blood pH is on the slightly basic side of the pH scale, around 7.35 to 7.45. If that's not a number you already know, you'll want to make sure that one sticks. 7.35 to 7.45. We're hot-blooded, no joke, okay? So we have metabolism regulated by thyroxine, or T4, and its buddy T3, or triiodothyronine. And so our metabolic rate and our body's metabolism is what makes us have warm blood. And that's good because warm blood circulates throughout our bodies and keeps us warm. If we were circulating cold blood, what would happen to us? You'd be hypothermic, yeah, you'd be cold. And so you'd be like a lizard sitting out in the sun, right? Okay, so by nature, us being hot-blooded means that we are circulating warmth through our cells and tissues. So 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit is our average blood temperature. And we do know that blood is thicker than water, and the term for the thickness is viscosity. So let's think about maple syrup for just a moment. Maple syrup is viscous, meaning it's thick. Tap water is not viscous, it's thin and runny. Okay, so blood is a little thicker than water, meaning it's a little more viscous than water. And the viscosity is dependent on how much blood volume you've got, how much water you're circulating. Let's talk about blood colors. Blood is typically bright red when it's oxygenated, and it's dark red when it's deoxygenated. What does that mean to be deoxygenated? Right, not a lot of oxygen in there, right? We oftentimes look at our skin, or we look at people's lips or fingernails, and we say, oh, they're blue, they must be deoxygenated. Yeah, we say sick, perhaps sick, cold, hypoxic, right? Okay. So there is actually never a time when blood is truly blue. It's all in your eyes, right? So it's the way your eyes perceive color and the way your brain interprets that. The color of dark red mixed with melanin actually makes your brain perceive a greenish to a bluish color. So the green-blue color that we experience during hypoxia, cold, illness, cyanosis is actually a dark red blood color. So we are not ever Smurfs. All right, so let's head down to the middle of the page and talk about transportation. What are some of the things that blood will transport for us? Good. Oxygen and carbon dioxide, blood gases, good.
Bacteria.
It could very well transport bacteria and viruses. Hormones, yep. Hormones are definitely transported this way. Good stuff like nutrients, like glucose, and waste products like urea and uric acid and creatinine can also be transported in our bloodstream. So I kind of think of your blood like a river. It's the good and the bad. Everything gets dumped in there and taken to a destination. All right, so let's see. Regulation is next. We know that body temperature is averaging around 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And of course, by having warmer blood than body temperature, that maintains warmth inside our bodies. What else does blood help us regulate?
Water.
Water levels, good.
pH,
good.
And body temperature.
Body temperature. Let me take you back to hormones for just a minute and think about some hormones that help us to regulate blood, volume, and pressure. Antidiuretic hormone, ADH.
Aldosterone.
Epinephrine. Norepinephrine, good. So, specifically, what does ADH do to the blood? Water, good. Increases the water volume in your bloodstream. And what specifically does aldosterone do for blood?
Salt.
Makes you retain sodium and makes you get rid of
potassium.
Good. And then, of course, epinephrine and norepinephrine squeeze your vessels and increase your blood pressure. So we'll talk more about those in the kidney chapter. So, yeah, there's a lot that we've talked about already that influences blood volume and how we regulate how much water we're transporting. Let's see. The last thing there in terms of protection is we're protected from fluid loss. We have a blood clotting mechanism. And we also have white blood cells protect us from foreign invaders like bacteria and viruses. Good. So let's talk about what's in a drop of blood. Head down there to the bottom of your page. We already know that about 55% of your blood volume is blood plasma. That's the liquid portion of your blood. And around 45% is composed of your formed elements. That's a fancy way to say our blood cells. Okay, so I would know those percentages. I'd mark them or highlight them. We know that blood plasma is mostly water, and there's some dissolved substances transported here as well. We've talked about them. We've talked about hormones, blood gases, nutrients like glucose is transported here, waste products like urea and uric acid, creatinine are also transported here. And then there's some other stuff that's transported in your blood plasma that we have not yet discussed. Down there near the bottom of your page, you'll notice that we are transporting plasma proteins. Okay, and there's a blank there for you to fill in. The first blank is for the word albumin. Okay, so down near the bottom of your page, plasma proteins, the first blank there is for the word albumin. Albumin is an important plasma protein made by your liver. It helps us to maintain blood pressure. We also transport antibodies, these Y-shaped structures that we were talking about earlier, made by your white blood cells. We transport these antibodies also in your blood plasma. We also transport thyroglobulin. That's the one that escorts thyroxine to its destination cells. It too is transported in your blood plasma. And we also carry clotting proteins like fibrinogen in our blood plasma. So here's just something to kind of appreciate. Back when you studied connective tissues, you probably learned that connective tissues had fibers, right? You know, reticular, elastic, things like that. And even we called some of our connective tissues CT proper or fibrous connective tissues because of their abundant visible fibers. And then you look at something like blood and you say, hey blood, you're a connective tissue. Where are your visible fibers? And thankfully, we don't have these stringy hairs of fibers in our bloodstream. These fibers that you're looking at here, these proteins actually are carried in a dissolved state. So the only time we see the fibers actually appear out of blood is when you clot your blood. So that's the only time you actually need to change the status, the liquid blood, into a more jelly or a solid-like blood. But otherwise, you know, it doesn't really fit the bill. We don't have fiber strings of proteins traveling in our bloodstream. So I just want to kind of put that thought in your head there about the way these proteins are transported. I did want to show you this picture. You'll notice that the blood plasma tends to be a straw yellow color. It is not red. What does the redness of blood come from? Binding to?
Hemoglobin.
Hemoglobin, yeah. So remove the blood cells and plasma by itself takes on a somewhat yellowish color. Okay, so you can do plasma donations. I noticed there's a place on Second Loop Road that's opened up recently, and they will take plasma donations. They usually pay for plasma donations. If you do a whole blood donation, they oftentimes don't pay for that. So college campuses are oftentimes located nearby plasma donation centers because, you know, college kids love some extra cash, right? But, you know, if you take and donate plasma, they'll take it, I think it's like every 2 weeks.
Is it like a real, like, long process, though?
It is a long process, yeah. They take whole blood out of one arm, they centrifuge it, they spin off your plasma, and they actually give you back your blood cells.
No.
Put it back in.
Give
it back to you. It's like two or three, yeah. And then pump it back in. Have you done it before?
No, but...
Anybody done plasma donation before? Yeah.
I've
yeah,
seen
no.
people like get it done. Just lay there for hours.
Yeah. So if you've got some hours to kill, then...
Yeah.
They usually pay pretty good, too. It's like $50 or something for...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It's our job, huh?
Yeah, I'm serious.
They wouldn't take it when you were pregnant.
Well, I was in phlebotomy, and I'm anemic, so my teacher was like, oh.
Yeah. Especially being anemic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me take you to the top of page 23. Talk there about those formed elements. We actually have three major types of blood cells in our bloodstream. You probably already know this. They're red, white, and platelets, but not in that order. The red blood cells are the most common of all of our blood cells. Platelets come in at number two, and white blood cells at a very distant third. You will want to know the order. You'll want to know that red blood cells are the most common, and white blood cells are the least common. Backwards for just a moment. We just looked at this particular centrifuge tube of blood, and we were talking about the blood plasma being kind of a straw yellow color. You'll notice that the red blood cells actually sink to the bottom, and they make up around 45% of your whole blood volume. What percent does your plasma make up?
55%.
About 55%. So if you're talking about plasma versus the red blood cells, you then say, oh, wait a minute, there are white blood cells and platelets. Where do they fit into this centrifuged blood?
The buffy layer.
The buffy layer, right. So technically, that's about 1% of the blood volume. That's where you find your white blood cells and your platelets sit. So if you do the math, you know, if 55% is plasma, 1% is buffy layer, that's 56%. 44% then would be your red blood cells, right? So that means by far your red blood cells outnumber every other cell type almost 10 to 1. So why do we need so many red blood cells?
Carry oxygen.
Oxygen, that's exactly it, right. So in this picture, you do notice those red blood cells outnumber those two white blood cells here in this picture, and the platelets look like an afterthought. They're these tiny fragments, right? Okay. And no plasma, it's evaporated off the slide, so you actually don't get to see the liquid portion of the blood. This is just the formed elements that are left behind. Let's see, let's talk a little bit about red blood cells or erythrocytes. You can also call them RBCs for short. We already know the function is to transport blood gases. Primarily, it's oxygen and carbon dioxide. I do want to mention that red blood cells don't use their own oxygen in transporting it. They actually make their own ATP anaerobically. What does anaerobic mean? No oxygen. Yeah. So that's kind of them not to utilize their own supply. Imagine if you were the bread delivery truck, and by the time you made your first delivery, you'd had like several loaves of bread to eat in the back. And by the time you made your way to the last delivery, you're like, I'm sorry, I had some stuff to deliver to you, but I was really hungry and bread's all gone now. So it's important that those oxygen molecules are not being consumed by the red blood cells. We want to make sure all of them make their way to our cells and tissues. So that's why it's important that we don't actually use the oxygen to manufacture ATP. We do it through glycolysis, which is an anaerobic without oxygen process. We think of these red blood cells as flexible. We think of them as being able to kind of bend in on themselves, bend through and pass through a capillary, and then they can expand back out. How would you describe their overall shape? Biconcave, kind of like a donut, okay? And of course, they're not hollow in the middle like a donut, but they have a narrowed area in the inside. But you're right, they have a fattened outside like a tire or a donut, and an innermost portion is kind of flattened out. I know, you're making me hungry, right? Nucleus is missing from the red blood cell. When you look at one of these pictures like this one, you'll notice there is no nucleus that is stained in that picture. These are drones. They have no mind of their own. They have no way to repair themselves. They are brainless and floating through your bloodstream. Their only job in life is to do what?
Transport oxygen.
Yeah. Transport oxygen and carbon dioxide. So they do not repair themselves. They have very few organelles. And so their life depends on being in good condition. And when they reach the end of their lifetime, their lifespan, then we just simply remove them and recycle them and start with a new one. So that's what they are. They're just brainless drones floating through your bloodstream delivering gases. Let's talk about the hematocrit levels. This is the percentage of your blood occupied by erythrocytes or red blood cells. And since we know that about 55% of your blood is composed of plasma, we know that around 45% or so is composed of erythrocytes. And that on average is our hematocrit value. Why do you think men have a little more hematocrit than say females? I can talk, it's like Monday again. More muscle mass, you're right. Bigger body size. Good, that's two good reasons. Why do you think women are more susceptible to anemias?
Menstrual cycle,
exactly, good. And women have less red blood cells, so if you talk about losing some blood during a menstrual cycle, you may be teetering on the edge of what's the lower limit, right? Go ahead, questions. Polycythemia could cause the hematocrit increase at a high altitude, so they're kind of the same, one and the same there. It's called polycythemia vera if it's actually a blood cancer or bone marrow cancer that causes the increase that way. But there's other reasons you might have a hematocrit increase. You could have, say, dehydration that gets the numbers out of whack, and that could also make the hematocrit look unnaturally high. But yes, high altitude would be one form of polycythemia.
But it shouldn't be like drastically high, should it?
Not drastically high. I mean, we're not talking like 80%.
Okay, as if it were to be with the polycythemia?
Yeah, the polycythemia bone marrow cancer could produce dramatically high numbers.
Okay.
Right. Anybody still need the slide? So just again, we're looking at centrifuged blood. That means the blood has been spun and the lighter weight plasma floats to the top. It is yellowish in color. The denser, heavier red blood cells sink to the bottom. And right between those two, the plasma and the red blood cells, is our buffy coat of white blood cells and platelets. Are you comfortable with doing the calculation from lab for hematocrit values? Okay, so if I said I've got 40% of blood volume composed of erythrocytes, you would say the hematocrit is, or 40% of your blood volume is hematocrit, then you have how many erythrocytes? 40%. If I've got 50% of my blood volume composed of erythrocytes, my hematocrit is 50%. Let's flip-flop it, though. Let's say that we have 60% of our blood volume composed of plasma.
40%.
And then, okay, so 60% is plasma, 1%, assume always 1% for the buffy coat. 39. Yep. Hematocrit is 39%. Good. Oh, let's do another one. Let's say that 70% is blood plasma. 1% is buffy coat. Assume 1%, right? 29% hematocrit, right. Is that normal? Right, because that's definitely below everybody's typical range. So if you had 29% hematocrit, what do you think's going on? Anemia. Yep, so some type of anemia. Good. Let's talk about hemoglobin, because that is a very common protein inside our red blood cells. This particular protein is a polypeptide protein. It's got four polypeptide chains, in fact, and each polypeptide chain transports an oxygen molecule. They've color-coded them here in this picture. There's two beta chains on top. There's two alpha chains on the bottom there. These are globe or round-shaped chains, and that is partly the reason we call this hemoglobin. Okay? So four globin chains. Each globin chain has its own heme group. Ah, there's the other part of the name, right? Mm-hmm. So each globin chain has a heme group. The heme group has an iron molecule, and that is specifically what your oxygens will bind. So in total, one hemoglobin molecule has four globin chains, four heme groups, four iron molecules, and you can transport how many oxygens?
Four.
That is your magic number for hemoglobin. Okay, so down there near the bottom of your page, you've got a blank. Four molecules of oxygen can be transported. So if you can remember the number four, you're good to go with hemoglobin, right? You do transport CO2 on hemoglobin. A small amount can be transported here. However, it does not interfere with oxygen transport. It binds to your amino acids on the heme, or rather on the globin chain, not the heme group. Therefore, it's not necessarily bumping oxygen from getting a ride. So we'll talk a little more about carbon dioxide transport in the respiratory chapter. Let's see, we've made it to the bottom of the page. Why don't we make a note that on Tuesday we'll start with the top of 24. We'll probably finish this chapter come Tuesday. Y'all have a good weekend.